Well, welcome this morning for those of you who call Inglewood home, for those who are viewing online, and for those of you who are new. And welcome as we start to begin to wrap up our Next Step series. And today we are having a look at that topic of Sabbath. Come into my world for just a moment. It's 7 a.m. and I'm planning how to get through today. There's school lunches to be made, the dishes need to go away, and I'm scrambling through that full washing hamper trying to find a clean school uniform or socks. The dog has knocked over the bin again, so that's got to be cleaned up. And there's a meal to be figured out for this evening because guests are coming over. I've got work today, so there's social media and newsletters to post, there's team members who need run sheets finalised, there's supplies that need purchasing, there's meetings that need those handouts printed. Oh, and someone just messaged about that weekend catch-up and I realise I need to organise a babysitter. There's that call to Centrelink that I'm avoiding because I know I'm going to be waiting for like 3 hours, and who's got that in the Dale? And the mail has been sent to the wrong address again. Ugh. Plus there's the little slip on the door saying we just missed you and I was home the whole day. I've got an assignment due this week and I haven't been to the gym in days. By the time 2 p.m. hits, I'm exhausted and I'd love to have a nap to just catch up on the sleep deprivation I have because my child has woken up 3 nights in a row from nightmares, but I realise I haven't had lunch and there's shopping to do. And then my husband calls and says, "Honey, the washing machine is broken." Can you relate? The mums can. Guys, I know you've got your own things, but man, having to cancel, postpone, delay those catch-ups with friends because of work pressures and life overload, not having time to get out and exercise or cook a healthy meal and just grabbing the nearest snack or takeout, finding it difficult to get a good night's rest, feeling anxious, overwhelmed, easily irritable. And sometimes we look in the mirror and go, "I just don't like who I am right now." Can you relate? According to an OECD survey, 13% of Australian employees are working 50 plus hour weeks. Now that's above what is considered the recommended OECD average, and it's actually higher than the percentages we see in our sister countries like the UK, Canada, and even the US. In order to battle the rising cost of living, an increasing number of Australians are working multiple jobs, and there would be many here today and viewing online who are part of that statistic. You're working 2, possibly 3 different forms of employment, and across every sector, it is estimated that the average Australian works unpaid overtime of 4 hours and 20 minutes per week. That amounts to about 6 weeks by the end of the year. I could think of a really great holiday in that time. Despite our laid-back Aussie caricature that we portray, the truth is that we live in a culture of hurry, exhaustion, and overload. And so today, I want to invite you to just come. Just come and rest. Take a moment, a peaceful moment in God through the practice of Sabbath. Now, Sabbath is a 24-hour time period where we stop all work and set aside the day to rest, to delight, and to worship. During this period, whether it be a Sunday through to Monday, a Saturday through to Sunday, or depending on your work schedule, you may need to do a weekday and weeknight. It's a time where we stop and intentionally attune ourselves to Jesus. The practice helps reshape and reform our relationship to work and to rest. And it's my hope that we become a community of rest in a culture of hurry, exhaustion, and overload through the practice of Sabbath. Today, I'll be heavily leaning on John Mark Comer's teachings around Sabbath, who's the author of Practicing the Way. And we're going to delve into why we've been given the Sabbath, what it's meant to be doing in us, and how do we actually practice it? So let's begin. Why did God give us the Sabbath, and what does he want us to do with it? We're first introduced to the idea of Sabbath in the creation account in Genesis. It's the opening chapter of the Bible, which describes the formation of the heavens and the earth over 6 days through the power of God. And on the seventh, we hear that God completes and ceases his work. The word used here is the Hebrew word Shabbat, which means to stop, to cease, to desist, to rest. And the opening chapters of Genesis, we know, were kind of rhythmic and melodic in nature. It's a composition of song more than narrative, and it was something that was passed down generation to generation through an oral tradition. That means it was perfectly recited and learnt through hearing rather than reading. So if we were in that time and in that culture, we would notice as it was being sung, two significant changes that grab our attention. The first is a change in cadence or pattern. As the Lord's handiwork is described, each stanza ends with the naming of the day, and we have this rhythmic pattern of it was morning, it was evening the first day, it was morning, it was evening the second day, it was morning, it was evening the third day. Da-da-da-da-da-da. You get me? Yeah, good. But shift occurs on the seventh day, which is named first. The second thing that we notice is the use of repetition. Now, anytime repetition is used in the Bible, it's to highlight something of great importance. It's the bold, underline, caps lock, highlighter, you name it. Here, the seventh day is named three times, which is the number of completion in the Hebrew tradition. Our God is three in one. The angels cry, holy, holy, holy. Jesus Christ rose on the third day. If it were a song, Genesis's rhythm would go, a one, a two, a three, a four, a five, a six, Sabbath, Sabbath, Sabbath. The seventh day is the catchy Taylor Swift chorus that the verses build towards and they resolve around. It's the memorable refrain we return to. It's that moment that we experience when we go to Scorchers games and we are there in the crowd and they start to do the la, 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 and everybody's singing because we all know it. Hey, Jude. All created life centers around and resolves in Sabbath. And it is the first universally experienced moment in creation. All creation breathes a sigh of relief on Sabbath. Indeed, that seventh day Sabbath rest is written into the fabric of creation. This rhythm for life is later prescribed in Exodus, and God's people are instructed to remember the Sabbath and keep it holy because God rested on the seventh day and blessed it. As the people of God, we're called to adopt the same rhythm of work and rest as the Lord does. Later in Exodus 31, the Lord directs Moses that the keeping of the Sabbath is a characteristic of covenant relationship. Sabbath is to be upheld throughout the generations as a sign of being God's covenant people. Exodus 31:17 speaks of the seventh day as not only a day where God rested and ceased from his working, but when he was refreshed. It adds that word in. And the image of God here is that he stops and catches his breath. When we Sabbath, we don't simply cease work and stop and rest. Our souls are refreshed. New life is breathed into the very fiber of our being. It's kind of like that commercial where you have Mr. Bean and he's running across and stumbling across rooftops and he collapses in and these people are looking at him and a friend comes over and hands him a Snickers bar. And as he takes a bite, he transforms into his true ninja identity. And the tagline comes across, "You're not you when you're hungry." Thanks for that clap. Without our Snickers Sabbath, we are not truly, deeply satisfied. We need our Snickers Sabbath in order to be that true Christian conformed identity in Christ. We're just hangry worshippers without it. Yet we become a people whose souls are made to rest through the practice of Sabbath. And so often we relate rest with reward. Rest is what comes when we finish doing everything that needs to be done, when we get to the end of the task list. But if we're really honest, so often the reward of rest escapes us as new tasks get tacked on faster than we can complete them. And there's always something else that needs to be done. The washing is never done. But Sabbath invites us not to see rest as the end reward, but as the refreshing fount from which we step out of ready to work. It's like that morning shower that we step out of into the day. It liberates us from the need to be finished, and we are encouraged to worship God, not just through working and task completing and doing, but through stopping. As Richard Veloz says, Sabbath is a gift that precedes work and enables us to work. For some of us, we need to take hold of this deep desire for rest and realize that's God-given. And we experience it not by getting everything done, but by leaving things undone. If you're the sort of person today and you feel tired and you are looking to the next holiday as that moment where you can finally breathe a sigh of relief, then you are missing out on the rest that God is inviting you into, a rhythm for life, which is week by week, where you actually step out feeling full. How glorious is that as a life? And it's something that we don't achieve by doing more. It's something that is achieved when we actually just stop the rat race. We're not just called to be individual people of rest. Deuteronomy chapter 5, verses 12 to 15 repeats the command to observe the Sabbath, but this time for the sake of social justice. It's that we are called to be a community of rest. It says, remember you were slaves in Egypt and how I brought you out by a mighty hand. Not only does God give us the Sabbath as a rhythm for rest and as a rest for our souls, but as a commitment to freedom. The Israelites were encouraged to remember their time of slavery in Egypt, how they were diminished as a people from human beings to human doings. And they're encouraged not to revive what has been removed, what God has brought them out of and worked hard to achieve by becoming enslaved to a different kind of work and labor without rest. Furthermore, we are not to become like Pharaohs in our own lives, where we constantly add more work to others, unfair expectations and unholy work-life balances. We are to be a community free from that, committed to freedom, not only for ourselves, but for those in our care. It is a gift we bestow upon those in our care. That's the same point that Jesus makes to the Pharisees in the five different occasions across the Gospels where he pushes against the understanding of Sabbath. Now, Jesus affirms the Sabbath generally, but he does also restore the proper practice of Sabbath. When his disciples are accused of unlawful Sabbath practice, Jesus counters the Pharisees, saying that it's lawful to protect the vulnerable, to feed the hungry, to show mercy and compassion, and to act justly. He gives a once and for all overarching principle that the Sabbath was made for humankind, not humankind for the Sabbath. Sabbath is a day for worshipful practices. Compassion, mercy, justice, and covenant signs are worth practicing on the Sabbath because it is worship. It is not just a day where we sit on our butts and do nothing. That's not the kind of rest and refreshment we're called to. The end goal isn't to say, I practice Sabbath. It's to apprentice under Jesus and live a life transformed. So what is this practice meant to be doing in me? Walt Brueggemann says that people who live Sabbath live all 7 days differently. The goal is to become a person who is marked by an inner spirit of peace and restfulness, who is calm, who is at ease in their own body, who's unhurried, kind, present. It's to become aware of what God is doing around you, to be sincerely grateful, emotionally healthy, and delighted by the goodness of God in your life. In the words of T.M. Suffield, we think that rest is passive, like watching television or sleeping, but it isn't. It's not active either, as though rest required rigorous study of the Bible or something similar. It's more active than it is passive, but it's best to think of it as neither. Rest is received. Eugene Peterson says it this way: Sabbath is a time to do nothing so we can receive everything. One of the highlights of living in Mandurah is that there's dolphins in the estuary. And I love dolphins. As often as I could, I would walk along or jog along the water's edge, and I particularly planned out paths where I could walk a long way along the water for as long as I could. And I would do this because I always hoped to see one. And kind of like a meerkat, I would pop up My attention would be, you know, there as soon as I saw someone point across the water, or, you know, a group that's kind of huddling and staring out across the horizon, because these were the signs that a dolphin had been spotted. I remember on a particular day, it was a really dark time. It was one of those seasons in life where Peter and I were struggling with catastrophic bad news. It wasn't something that could be easily remedied or fixed. It was going to be a long-term journey through it. And I had to work. And I just felt like I was kind of carrying the world on my shoulders in that moment. And I remember going to work with this prayer where I knew nothing could be fixed in a day, but the prayer was just, God, a small mercy, a sliver of delight in the day so that I know it's going to be okay. And I remember at the end of my shift, I was walking to my car. I was still in a fairly distressed state. And I saw in periphery that unmistakable tail splash of a dolphin. And I knew in that moment that was the sliver I'd prayed for. That was the moment of God saying, I see you, I'm with you, it will be okay. What moments have you treasured in the last month? As you think about them, how many of those moments come because of your perfect plans? Or were they moments that seem coincidental, accidental even? What sacred moments have you been given? True rest is like seeing dolphins in the estuary. It's an unorchestrated moment that is given to you. You can't grasp those moments. So what is there to do when you see a dolphin, when you have a sacred moment? We stop, we take it in, we delight in it while it's there, and as it passes, we move on. And the good news is that every Sabbath is a rehearsal for eternity. The best of what you experience on Sabbath is just a taste of the promised rest that's yet to come. So what are we meant to engage on when it comes to Sabbath? How do we practically do it? Well, Pete Gazzero says that every Sabbath should include these four ingredients. They are that we stop, we rest, we delight, and we worship. So firstly, we stop. We cease working. We don't wait until work is done before stopping. We stop irrespective of the tasks. We may have to leave things undone, but in this way, we ensure that we're not slaves to work. Being able to stop may require some planning on your part and some preparation. You may need to cook a meal, go shopping beforehand, answer some emails, send some messages so that you can turn your phone off. You might find it helpful that, much like in a marathon where you have a gun to mark the start of the race and a ribbon to mark the end, it can be helpful to bookend your Sabbath, your 24-hour period, with a beginning and an ending ritual. In a traditional Sabbath ceremony called the Kiddush, you begin by lighting candles, praying, and eating a Sabbath meal with your family and community. And you end by praying and sharing the highlight of your Sabbath. You can do exactly that, or you can get creative. You know, start with a picnic, with a bonfire, a nice hot bath. Or perhaps you let this, your Sunday morning service worship, mark the start. And what I love is that God does not expect us to do this individually. This is something we do collectively and communally. It's something you can do in your family. You're invited to do this together. It's easy to have a meal as a family.
The second thing that we do is we rest. Now, rest doesn't mean inactivity, rather it's engaging in things that are life-giving. Ask yourself, what are the activities that make me feel alive? And what makes me feel more present to life? Go for a walk. Enjoy nature. Swim. Have a nap. Journal. Engage in some other spiritual practices like fasting. It's also a time where we resist the cultural forces that are anti-rest, such as running errands, social obligations, chores, social media, the internet, TV, entertainment, and phones. And I just want to make a little note here, especially to our young adults and to our youth guys. Can I just really encourage you that more than any other generation, you are being demanded to subscribe to a culture that is phone dependent, where your Snapchat, your Instagram, your feeds are pinging at you. And I want to just share with you some research. This comes from Jonathan Haidt, who's the author of The Anxious Generation. He says, the phone-based life affects people's spirituality by blocking or counteracting six spiritual practices: shared sacredness, embodiment, stillness, silence, focus, self-transcendence, being slow to anger, quick to forgive, and finding awe in nature. Now, I understand that when we feel anxious, it's really easy to pick a phone over getting up and chatting to somebody. It's easier to choose something that's distracting. It's easier sometimes to hide away when we're not feeling safe or confident and to watch something and to kind of hide in our tech. I understand that. But I want you to know what it's robbing you of. If you have a deep desire to connect, if you have a deep desire to have a fulfillment in the, you know, the real guts of your person, can I encourage you to take up this practice of rather reaching for something that is fake rest and fake connection, to reach for what's real, and to just take 24 hours where you lay that aside and say, I'm going to practice, as scary as it might be, being present without my phone. And I promise you, if you honor God in this way, you're going to receive something so much better. You will receive real rest, real connection, and you might even meet Jesus. The third thing that we do is we delight. Wait, hang on. You're telling me that when it comes to Sabbath, it's not me just sitting and being holy. I can actually have a good wine with friends. Sign me up. What do you really enjoy? Sabbath is a day to experience the joy in life. Plan some fun for the day. Enjoy your favorite meal. Open a good bottle of wine. Laugh with friends. Romance your spouse. Play a game. Pump up the music. Get your nails done. Indulge in something you really love. Come alive and delight in the day. And lastly, Sabbath is a time to worship. The rabbinical tradition teaches us not to pray asking prayers on the Sabbath. We rest from contesting with God and requesting for that which is not yet. We attune ourselves instead to what already is. Sabbath is a day for gratitude-filled, noticing and thankful prayers. It's a day for celebrating what the Lord has done already and for the goodness that He's shown in our lives. In the words of Mark Buchanan, Sabbath is a time to cease what is necessary and to embrace that which gives life. As you go out today, consider how you might embrace the practice of Sabbath and enter into the spirit of rest, peace, refreshment and freedom and covenant worship that Christ calls us to partake in. And I want to leave you with the words of Christ that come from Matthew 11, verses 28 to 30. You might want to just close your eyes as I read this and imagine Jesus inviting you to this. Are you tired? Worn out? Burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Amen. Together, let's aim to become a community of rest in a culture of hurry and exhaustion through the practice of Sabbath.
Thank you, Alicia.